What made Jesus such a good teacher? Welcome to Good Word, a program dedicated to exploring issues of faith and scripture. Our discussion focuses on the Gospel of Luke. Specifically this week, our lesson title is Jesus, the Master Teacher. My name is Paul Dibdahl, and I'm joined by two other teachers, Daryl Bigger, a professor in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University, and Pam Kress, a professor in the School of Social Work and Sociology, also at Walla Walla University. Welcome to both of you. So all three of us are teachers. Mm. We should be experts in this subject. This discussion should be so easy for us because it's about Jesus as teacher. I don't know how confident you feel as to what you're going to say.
In fact, I was thinking of Parker Palmer's book, The Courage to Teach, and that about sums it up. Takes courage every time.
You don't need to give an overly complicated answer here. Is there anything that comes to mind when I ask what made Jesus such a good teacher? He was a gifted teacher. What did he do?
He made people think. I've been intrigued about his ability to get people to ask questions, to think about things that they hadn't thought about before he made the statements or asked the questions of them.
Yep. Pam, if I put you on the spot.
Yeah, he spoke with authority, oftentimes not quoting a lot of scripture, which might have been appropriate since he would have known all of that, which to me speaks of some authenticity that maybe we as human beings crave to see in others, that they're authentic about who they are and what they know and how they give that away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Luke 4:32, we read that the crowds were amazed. People were amazed at Jesus because, as you said, Pam, he taught with authority. And you kind of stole my thunder there a little bit. I was going to ask what gave him authority, and you suggested maybe authenticity.
I don't know if that's
that does something. Anything else that would have given people would have said, "Wow, he teaches with authority."
Self confidence. He wasn't searching for what to say, was he? Don't you think that 30-year period of time before he started his public work was spent in very careful reflection? Mm-hmm. And sorting things out in his mind.
I had a teacher once in seminary, actually, who said, "When you're teaching, you should never be sharing all that you know nor all that you have thought." He even had a fraction for us. He said it shouldn't be more than 2/5. It was strange enough that it stuck in my mind. It shouldn't be more than that. And I think of that, Daryl, when you talk about that time of preparation, that Jesus hasn't just shown up on the scene and immediately, you know, begun to throw out pearls of wisdom, but there's a depth to him so that when he did speak, I would think that he's speaking out of a reservoir of study and reflection, communion with God, that somehow then when he spoke, people felt the authority. Jesus also taught through his actions. Mm-hmm. His life, I think, was intended to communicate certain lessons. So if Jesus, this is a suppose, if Jesus had been born and had lived all of his life without the ability to form words with his mouth, do you think his ministry on earth could have still been successful? Could the most important truths about himself and God still been communicated even if he had never spoken?
Yes, I think so. I think that's true even of our own examples now as teachers. And I'm often surprised when students will come back and say things like it was your behavior that made your words ring true. and you'd like to think they would as well. So yeah, I think he could have.
How does
never
the old,
said a word. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead, Daryl.
How does the old saying go? Your actions speak so loud I can't hear your
right.
words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of congruity about that in him, wasn't mm-hmm. there?
Mm-hmm. So I put the question out there, and I don't have a neat and tidy answer, but part of it is because I probably have not reflected on this enough. But I do think that much of what Jesus came to share, I think we'd be able to get it if we paid really close attention to what he did.
Mm-hmm.
That seems important to me somehow, and it's a kind of appeal, or maybe a kind of encouragement. To well, me, because I'm too much into the words.
Even when he did talk, he seemed to ask questions. It wasn't a here's everything I know, which I think being 20 years into teaching is different than the first year I was in teaching, when I could be done with everything I knew in the first half an hour of the class.
Mm-hmm.
Versus now I stop and try to move my students more to reflection.
Yeah.
So. So, I like that idea of asking more questions.
Why would you ask more questions? I actually went through, this was just in my English translation. I looked through the Gospels, and it was specifically Luke that I worked my way through. I counted 32 questions that people asked Jesus, but Jesus asked people 92 questions in the Gospel. So there's a real emphasis on this. What value? It seems like this is the Son of God. It seems like he should be the one answering questions instead of asking questions. Help me make sense of this.
Well,
see, now I'm
thinking, and one of my degrees is in education, and part of what they teach you with education is that we're always hanging new information onto old information so that you kind of stack your learning. What if Jesus asked questions that would have a different answer for each person who was listening because of their different experiences of learning up to that point? What did that mean to them? And mm-hmm. yet maybe ultimately they all coming around to the same point. I don't know. I'm just kind of speculating mm-hmm. about that. But mm-hmm. you're building upon the knowledge people have, and everybody would be at different levels. So mm-hmm. asking the question mm-hmm. allows them to make meaning. Mm-hmm. Where they need to make the meaning.
And another result of asking questions of people is that it's a way of respecting and valuing those people.
Mm. Yes.
Assuming they have something to contribute to this discussion.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that very much.
And we mentioned earlier that having to answer a question that's been asked makes you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it engages the audience, rather than just let them listen, they have to respond in some way. So it elicits a response.
There's something connective, isn't there, about questions?
Mm-hmm.
A good question is only a good question if you know the person that you're asking the question of, mm-hmm. and then once the question is asked, it's almost like that other person owes reflection and answer mm-hmm. back to you, which somehow brings you together in meaningful ways.
Mm-hmm. Daryl's a master at this. And in fact, we often have had conversations in our home about how Daryl is a master of asking you a question when you ask him one. So the question always gets back. And I think that is a way of your ability to say, I'm interested really more in what you have to think than what I have to think on that issue. So I like the fact that you're connecting with exactly Jesus's mm-hmm. interest. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in you as a person.
Mm-hmm. Knowing this, why is it that we lecture so much?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the three of us. Why do we stand up front and give out information? Is it easier to do that than ask good questions?
Yes.
Is that it?
It is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of handling my own anxiety. Yeah. Because as a person who's primarily extroverted, words come fairly easy.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in the same category.
But the silences scare me to death.
And there's silence here as we reflect together. Yes.
You're an introvert, Paul. Did they do those silences?
I am. I am. A little story prompted, Pam, just by that last comment. I was spent the early years of my life in Asia, and I'm thinking of Singapore in particular. And I vaguely remember this. I remember it primarily through the recollection of my father, my parents. But when we came to Singapore, there were people, several people that at various times would come to the house, knock on the door, and ask to come in. And we would welcome them in. We were missionaries, wanted to be hospitable. They would come and sit. And it took my parents some time to realize that they did not expect us to sit and engage in conversation. They simply came to sit and be present and observe.
Hmm.
And when asked, you know, what finally kind of asked, well, what
are you here?
What are you here for? They said, oh, well, nothing. I want to learn more about you and to be here in your home and to watch how you're interacting with your family and all that is very helpful. That comfort with silence and quietness and learning from people's actions more than what they're telling us, I think we see elements. I think Jesus would have been very comfortable in that kind of setting, but we aren't. We aren't so much.
No, I don't know about you, Darrell. I couldn't do that.
Yeah. Huh. Well, you're reminding me of the disciples who were following Jesus after the baptism and asked, and when Jesus turned around and looked at them, they asked him, where do you live? And he said, come and see.
Yeah.
Just be with me.
Be with me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful place for us to end today. I think that invitation still stands. Many of us, I think, have heard about Jesus as teacher through other teachers. And we probably ought to explore ourselves. We ought to come and see. And I'd invite you to do that on your own. Thank you, Pam, Darrell, for your willingness to share. Thanks also to David Olson, our program engineer. Finally, thank you for listening in. For Good Word, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.